Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. We're going to catch up now with a frequent voice on these airwaves, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and as a regular guest on this show, Paula Poundstone. The comedian, author, and podcast host will be returning to our region for several gigs in the next couple of weeks. October 3rd at the Richfield Playhouse, October 4th at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, and October 12th at the Flynn Center for the Arts in Burlington. Paula Poundstone has been doing stand-up for 4 decades, and it's my pleasure to welcome her back to the roundtable. How are you?
Thanks. Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Do you still enjoy getting out on the road?
I love my job. I have the best job in the world. You know, the thing, I consider myself a proud member of the endorphin-producing industry. It's good for you. It's good. Well, you know, I mean, it's good to go out and laugh for the night, and I get to be among a group of people who've come out to laugh for the night. It's nice.
Do you feel like we need that more right now?
Well, I think so. I mean, I haven't been alive throughout history, so I can't say that. You know, I mean, it's not 1929, so I think that's good. But it is a. It's a dark period, that's for sure. I can't figure it out for the life of me. You know what I didn't realize? I didn't realize that the impeachment has never. It's never been done, sort of successfully, so to speak. I think when it was invoked before it the Senate never passed it. It was on the House would bring the articles of impeachment, but the Senate never completed it.
Right. So Andrew Johnson beat the rap on a close vote, and then Bill Clinton was able to win the Senate vote.
Yeah, and Nixon, of course, wasn't impeached. Nixon just left so that he wouldn't be.
Do you know Trump?
No, never met him.
Oh.
No, I'm. Thank goodness I never met him. You know, my guess would be, however, well, not at this point in the process. My guess would be that if one did meet him, that he would be charming. I had an experience one time years ago where I met. I performed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner mm-hmm. 1,000 years ago, and it was the first George Bush at the time, and. Long story short, I'm a Democrat, and I didn't share a lot of the views of the first George Bush, but I did go to entertain the White House correspondents at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and in the process, the president, when I arrived at the hotel. My message light was on. It was a message from the White House, and the president wanted to meet with me. Well, this was very exciting, even though I had been very resolute that, you know, me being a Democrat and him being a Republican, I really didn't, you know, I didn't want to, I didn't want pictures of us together. I didn't want this. I didn't want that. I was young and stupid. So, so I meet with him, and then afterwards, I had a friend who was a congressman, and afterwards I meet up with my congressman friend, and now I'm very sheepish that I have, that I've gone and met with the first George Bush, and who I was just kind of struck by, and so I say to my friend, I go, you know, he was very charming, and my friend said, Paula, we're all charming, or we wouldn't get elected. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure it's absolutely true. I'll tell you, you know what I think? In addition to all the crimes and all the problems within the administration, it occurred to me as a result of listening to the Greta girl talk that we're in so much trouble with climate change that at this point, I mean, we simply cannot have anybody who's not a firm believer in science and moving forward on figuring out how to get out of the mess we're in with climate change. At this point, we're running for our lives. But it's funny that people don't view it that way. You know, that everyone's hair should be on fire over, you know, we should be in such a panic over climate change. But for some reason, we're just not. It's very weird.
What do you think explains that?
I don't know. I think it's human nature because it's not just us. It's the world over. I would say that little girl has the correct response, but it's just not, well, I certainly a lot of people share that response that went to that march the other day. There's something weird about our response. It's very ostrich, it's very head in the sand. Maybe it's, you know, I think part of it's your religion, part of it's wishful thinking. Part of it's just not wanting to, you know, not wanting to know. I've been struck by that when we've been given by scientists till 2030, they say, before we have to entirely reverse what we're doing or we can't get out of the problem. 2030 is not far away.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know, certainly in America, Americans being Americans, I have a bad feeling that on, you know, December 31st, 2029, we're all going to be in our backyards trying to assemble homemade windmills. We're all going to be going, mine's not turning, is yours turning? America just sort of responds slowly.
You know what I think it is, though, too? It's there are things you can do in your life to be better about, you know, producing waste and trying to live as a greener life as you can. You can eliminate plastic straws and try to take the bus to work, but that's not going to move the needle in a significant way, individual actions. And I think that makes a lot of people feel a little helpless about it.
Yeah, I think that is true. But, you know, and I bow down at the feet of the Greta girl. What has stopped us from absolutely insisting that we simply have to have laws that make corporations do things differently, and in turn, R&D that's, you know, moving to shift things. And the other thing is, you know, it's interesting, Trump's speech about, you know, the global, what was it, something about, you know, the future, basically the future belongs to nationalists, he was saying. There's no future, he said, there's no future for globalists.
Yeah, it's just patriots.
It's the opposite of that. Because you know how you were saying, well, it won't work for individuals, right? Those individual moves are not necessarily what's going to move the needle. Nor are the moves of individual countries. We have to reach out to the rest of the world. If China doesn't change what they're doing, if the Asian island countries with the little plastic things don't change what they're doing, we simply have to work in some coordination with the rest of the world, or we're toast.
Are you optimistic?
A weird experience. Am I optimistic? Well, I still recycle.
See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's good.
You know, I try to walk instead of driving where it's possible. I don't know. I'm optimistic enough to do those things. But I'm even though I know that my individual acts won't move the needle, I'm optimistic enough that I'm going to vote for a president that that says that on the first day in office, she'll start to work on climate change.
Who do you like?
Oh, Elizabeth Warren. I love Elizabeth Warren. It is her time. Any one of the Democrats would be a great idea, but Elizabeth Warren, I think, is our first problem is climate change, and our second problem is, inequity of both money and opportunity. And she has spent her life studying those issues, and so not studying climate change, but studying the issue of inequity, and so I think that she would be a good person. I was just reading, I'm reading a book about, I never can remember the name of the woman. Marie Antoinette. I'm reading a book about Marie Antoinette. And let me just say that an imperial president is a bad idea. I think there are some messages there from the monarchy.
Ending was abrupt for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Things didn't go well in the end. You know what's funny? One of the things I'm struck by having, I have three kids and they're all in their 20s now. And by the way, the 20s suck. They're awful years. They were awful years in my life and they're kind of awful years in my kids' life. I think the 20s just are not fun years. Maybe they should be, but they're not. Because they're very sort of experimental. You know, you're launching into your adulthood. In our society, you're expected to be an adult, but what we now know scientifically is that the brain doesn't finish developing until you're close to 30. I don't know who came up with the idea that you're an adult at either 18 or 21, because you sure don't seem like it. But Marie Antoinette was, I think, might have been 14 or 16 when she became a princess. When she first married Louis the 16th. He wasn't yet Louis the. Yeah, he was. He was Louis the 16th, but he wasn't. He wasn't yet.
He wasn't King Louis.
He wasn't King Louis, exactly. So the 15th was still alive and ruling, but you know. When you think about it, like 14 or right, around 14, somewhere in there. And then I believe she was 20 when she became queen. And you think about like a 14-year-old now, with the exception of the Greta girl, who's amazing. You think about a 14-year-old girl now, or a 16-year-old or 15-year-old girl now. And then she goes to live in Versailles. And she's queen, and people watch everything she does and care about it. And as a friend of mine said, how far from let them eat cake could you be? Teenage girls barely see a world around them. They just develop mentally. They're not really, you know, it's a very self-centered period of life. And so the idea that she wasn't like a sort of caring queen makes a tremendous amount of sense. And I don't think their brains developed differently back then, even though they lived shorter lives.
Yeah, they were just in more of a hurry.
Yeah, exactly. And their necks were no more secure against a blade than ours.
Let me go back to something you brought up, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which you had hosted in the first Bush administration. That tradition is now all but died. They're not doing a comic anymore after the Michelle Wolf experiment. What do you think of that?
Honestly, I think it's just as well. I think it was always a very strange event. And this is something, I live in Los Angeles. I both attend and perform at many, 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 you know, benefits and once-a-year days and award ceremonies of organizations.
We're listening to my interview with Paula Poundstone on The Roundtable. At this point in the interview, one of Paula's dogs apparently chewed through the wire on her landline, so we continue the interview on her cell phone.
Like so many, like fundraiser association kind of events. It just tries to be too many things. It never really understood, like, the association never figured out what that night was. You can only do a couple of things. Are you entertaining? Are you entertaining the crowd that's there? Are you, is it televised? It never used to be. Are you giving awards? Are you networking? They just don't know what they are. And so performing at that thing was always kind of raggedy. And it was, nine times out of ten, the performance part was very unsuccessful because, you know, somebody went away hurt. So, and so I don't know. I figure they're better off without a comic, honestly.
And there's also the question of the intersection of entertainment and politics. And a lot of people say that's how, a television star like Donald Trump became president in the first place.
No question that Americans... I mean, clearly I've made position known. To me, electing Trump is to America what beaching themselves is to whales. I don't understand it. I don't think scientists understand it. And the difference is we don't have another species to shove us back in the water. It's a race against time whether we'll get our democracy back before the Earth goes away.
Let me end on a happy note with you, Paula. Later in October,
not possible.
It's the 1,000th episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me coming up. So congratulations. You've been a big part of that show. And since that's one of our most popular programs here on WAMC, I just wanted your thoughts on reaching 1,000 episodes.
Well, it was bound to happen sometime after 999 episodes. That's a lot of episodes. I've been there maybe for 18 years now. I think the show's been around for 21 years now. And the brilliance of that show is they hire people and then let them do their job. That's the brilliance of that show. It's one of the only settings. I remember the first time I ever did the show 18 years ago. At that time, we performed not to a live audience. We weren't all together in one room. We were at various, we were at the NPR station closest to each of our dwellings. So I was in Los Angeles, Peter was in Chicago, Carl was in D.C., Adam was in New York, and we would be hooked up via wire. And so the first time I ever did the show, and I wasn't familiar with that show before I did it. First time I ever did it, you know, I got my goofy headset on, I'm sitting in a dark studio at NPR in Los Angeles, and you know, the show begins and Peter's the host and, you know, people are telling jokes and answering questions. And I was a little bit shy, not quite sure when to jump in. And this voice in my headset from the director comes in saying, jump in anytime, say whatever you want. I can't tell you how unheard of that is in the show business. But that's what they didn't do that just for me. They did that for everybody. They said, say whatever you want, jump in whatever you want. And so it unleashes this sort of feeling of freedom. And I don't know, there's like this kind of a pillow fight feeling about it sometimes, where you make a joke and somebody else thinks of a joke that can add on to that joke. And so they throw that in, and nobody seems to have any real ego about where the joke started. And it's so much fun.
Congratulations to you. You've been a huge part of its success. And we love having you on WAMC every Saturday morning with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Paula Poundstone, you're coming to our region October 3rd at the Richfield Playhouse, October 4th at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, and October 12th at the Flynn Center for the Arts in Burlington. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you, and good luck with those dogs.
Thank you so much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.